This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us this afternoon. 2 hours to go. And then Sports Talk will take over on WNML. Download the app, listen online, listen on your smart speaker at home. We are with you wherever you go or wherever you stay during this time away. We appreciate you hanging out with us on this Monday afternoon as well.
Hey, it's,
I mean,
it's
you got to think about that, right?
Yeah, yeah. I love the fact that you put it that way.
Yes. So there is still a lot to get to, including, I think, really good news for Tennessee's basketball team and program on Friday, and that was the announcement from E.J. Anasicki that he was transferring from Sacred Heart, where he has played really well, averaged better than 15 and 11 per game, a really good rebounder, and you recognize the last name. Anasicki is the same last name as Nikki Anasicki. That's his older sister, who was a really good player for Tennessee, helping them win national championships in the mid-2000s. And a basketball family. He has an older brother who led the nation in rebounding 2 consecutive years at Siena and now plays professionally. So the youngest of a number of siblings in the Anasicki family, and he is the latest that is headed to the University of Tennessee. He's actually in Knoxville finishing up classes online from Sacred Heart. And on Sunday, I had a chance to catch up with the grad transfer who announced that he's headed to Tennessee, E.J. Anasicki. E.J., the first thing I'll ask is just what it felt like to announce that you're going to play basketball at the University of Tennessee.
It really felt good. I mean, growing up, I've always been a Tennessee fan. My sister played here, and I fell in love with the school as soon as I stepped foot on campus to watch her play. At 6 years old, I was my first Final Four, and I see my sister win 2 national championships here. So ever since then, I love this school. It's always been my dream school.
So having the opportunity to play at Tennessee, how influential was Nikki and just your history around the University of Tennessee, having known about Tennessee athletics and Lady Vols basketball for so long, for, I guess, you know, most of your life from what you can remember?
Nikki is really influential. I mean, I've seen the success she had here playing at Tennessee. The experiences I had, especially her winning 2 championships here, is something I always wanted to do. And it's something I wanted to do in my collegiate career, and I felt like Tennessee was the place for me.
Yeah, and I read the story from GoVols247. I saw the photo where you were there for her senior day, so I guess you'll get to have your own as well. I mean, when you think about that, just the opportunity to play on the court where she played and to wear a Tennessee uniform, what do you think about that? How exciting is that opportunity?
It's really exciting. I believe it's like a testament to all my hard work that I've put in over the years to have this opportunity to play in the big stage and in a great conference, especially in the SEC, and it's something I'm definitely excited for and I look forward to.
Talking to forward E.J. Anasicki, who announced on Friday that he will transfer to Tennessee as a grad transfer from Sacred Heart. And E.J., at Sacred Heart, you had incredible numbers. How much of this move to Tennessee is you wanting to test yourself at a higher level playing in a conference like the SEC?
I feel like playing against good, great competition in the SEC is definitely going to help my development as a player. I definitely believe it's something I want to do, especially for my senior year, to go against the best. I love to compete, and I definitely look forward to playing in the SEC.
E.J., why do you think you're such a good rebounder?
I just play hard, and I play with heart, and rebounding runs in the family.
Yeah, your older brother, did he lead the nation in rebounding 2 straight years at Siena?
Yeah.
Yeah, so how much does your family help each other in terms of what you're doing? I know Nikki's talked about how much she's coached you from afar, but how much as a family do you think you've helped each other?
Since I was young, I always watched my older siblings play, so it's something that I just learned over time, especially for me at a young age, from 6 years old till now, just constantly watching them play basketball. I'll continue to add stuff to my game to learn it from my siblings that came before me.
E.J., you're the youngest of all your siblings. What's that been like growing up?
It's really nice. It has benefits. I mean, I feel like as the youngest, there's a lot of pressure, but I feel like it's very beneficial for me because being the youngest, I feel like I have to be the best at everyone because I get to learn from everyone else's mistakes and what they've done So I have the blueprint to follow. So it definitely is a good feeling.
Talking to EJ Anasicki, who is transferring to Tennessee for his senior year, there is the Tennessee side, EJ. What was the message from Coach Rick Barnes and his staff as you went through the process trying to figure out where you would ultimately go, which is Tennessee?
It was really good. Speaking with the coaching staff, we definitely had a lot of common goals, and it was really simple. Coach Barnes wants to win a national championship, an SEC championship, and he felt like I could be a big role in that and help them do that. And that's definitely something I wanted to do in my college career. And I felt that there's no better place for me to play my senior year at Tennessee.
Did Rick Barnes tell you how he thinks you can best impact Tennessee and what your role would be with the team?
I think I'm bringing a lot to the table, especially what I've done at Sacred Heart. Just continue to do what I do and help the team and whatever the team needs me to do to help them win. I believe definitely since I'm a senior, I had a lot of experience playing, and definitely bringing a good work ethic and being the leader on the court is definitely something that I'm going to bring to the table next year at Tennessee. So he believes that me, the team, to be the person I am, the player that I am, is definitely going to be beneficial to the team.
Hey, what was the recruiting process like, by the way, because of what we're going through right now with the recruiting rules, by the way, are different, but the lack of in-person contact we're able to have right now?
It was different. I feel like I was lucky enough to go through the recruiting process the first time when I was in high school, so I was really familiar with the process, especially when making a decision like this, and I felt like relationships were key. Even though I couldn't meet people face-to-face, but I was able to speak to people on the phone, speak to coaches on the phone, and develop relationships and get a feel for what the coaching staffs had, what their vision was for me and what they wanted me to do. And I definitely felt, after speaking with Coach Barnes, that we just had a really good relationship and we had the same vision.
Talking to EJ Anasicki, when you were talking about rebounding and your work ethic earlier, what kind of advantage do you think it gives you the way that you play so hard and how hard you work off the court?
I think it just gives you advantage to the fact that with all the work that I put in, it's hard for me to quit. You don't really quit when you invested a lot of your time and you made a lot of sacrifices into the game. You just keep playing and you just play to win. So I feel like that's the advantage that I have when it comes to that. And I just love playing. I just love playing the game. So,
have there been times where you've had to maybe take it easy, take a step back and not work quite as hard to make sure you don't tie yourself off the court?
Yeah. Last year, my sister kind of got on me a lot because I do love to work out, especially after games and stuff. I felt like I could have improved. But it's something that she kept working out. She kept pointing out to me and getting on me about being, taking care of my body and slowing down the amount of times that I work out just so I don't burn myself out. But I do like being in the gym. It's something that she's left to do. So,
how good of a coach is Nikki Anasicki?
She's a really good coach. She's been there since I was six. So, teaching about the game. So, I mean, I got this far, so that should just tell you about everything.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I'm guessing because she's going to continue her education online, so in Knoxville, right? So she'll be able to see you in person this upcoming year. How excited is she for that?
She's really excited for that. I mean, growing up, she really hasn't seen me play in person in a long time. So me playing in Knoxville is definitely going to be a great feeling for her, especially for my senior year and wearing her number.
Yeah, and you're obviously taking advantage of the opportunity as a graduate transfer to be able to leave one school and play right away elsewhere. What does that mean to you, the opportunity to be able to – you were able to graduate, or I guess you will after you finish up this semester, right? And then be able to play somewhere else, just that chance to go play somewhere else after finishing up an undergraduate degree.
It feels good. I mean, it's a testament to all the hard work I do in the classroom. I mean, being very fortunate to graduate in 3 years is something that not many people are able to do, especially while playing basketball. But it was a lot of work that was put in to graduate, and be able to pursue my master's in a different institution, a higher level institution. So I'm very fortunate to be able to accomplish that, and it's a great feeling.
Hey, and also, as you're talking about working on your game, what are some things that you want to work on or maybe you want to change to challenge yourself in your final year at Tennessee?
I feel like I want to work on everything. I just want to be the best possible player I could possibly be. I'll work on my body, my jump shot, just my overall skill set. I just feel like I just want to improve in every aspect of the game and be very more versatile than I'm already am.
And you've talked about watching the game develop. How much do you factor in wanting to expand your offensive range for your future?
I mean, it's very important. I mean, shooting the ball is a skill set that you must have to be a successful player. So definitely something I value.
Last couple of things with EJ Anasicki. You've obviously been playing elsewhere the last few years, but were you able to watch the program the last few years and see how it grew?
Oh, yeah. I've been following Tennessee basketball ever since I was young, especially when I was in college since my sister moved back down to Knoxville. I've been watching them, and I definitely see the success that they had playing here, and I want to have the same kind of success.
Okay, yeah, so you maintained at least interest in Tennessee basketball. What did you think watching what Rick Barnes has done over the last few years, especially, as I mentioned, those couple of seasons where they won a lot of games?
The team's really compete. Toughness is a quality you must have to play, especially in SEC, and especially if you play for Barnes. I love the physicality of the way they play. That's one thing that really caught my eye. They're very physical, and it's something that I just want to be a part of. I feel like my team fits well with everything they want to do, so I was really happy to be able to join the program.
So maybe even before you had the offer to come to Tennessee, could you tell that you had the mindset and style to fit in at Tennessee?
Yeah, I always felt like that.
Good deal. Well, hey, EJ, congratulations again. Good luck as you get settled in and finish up this semester at Sacred Heart, and I appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to me about it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Grad transfer EJ Anasicki, you can tell what his mindset is and how excited he is, I think, to finish out his college career at Tennessee. We'll talk more about that this afternoon. An interesting comparison that I think might work in terms of what he can provide for Tennessee's basketball team. We'll get to that a little bit later on the show today. You'll also hear from his head coach at Sacred Heart. I think really good news for Tennessee and a really good fit for Tennessee's basketball program. We'll come back here on Sports 180 with Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward, and catch up on what's going on from our news department. We'll update you there. What's going on in the SEC and the college football world? We're covering all of that for you this afternoon on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Yes.
It all comes down to the he said, she said. Here's Sports 180 with Josh and Heather.
Back on Sports 180, thank you for being with us on a beautiful Monday afternoon in East Tennessee alongside Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward, Sam Foreman producing for us. We're with you until 3 o'clock when Sports Talk will take over and continuing to keep you up to date with what's going on in the news world as it's an hour by hour, minute by minute following. Bob Yarbrough joins us from our sister station, News Talk 98.7 WOKI. Bob, good afternoon. What can you fill us in on that's happened here recently that you've been covering?
Yeah, hey, good afternoon, Josh and Heather. And like you said, Josh, I mean, it literally is an hour, 2 hour story that seems to have either changes or new numbers or whatever it might be regarding COVID-19 and coronavirus. And we'll try to give you the latest each and every weekday at this same time here on the Sports Animal regarding COVID-19 in Knox County and the surrounding counties. Now, the new numbers from Knox County released this morning at 11 o'clock, and there are now 57 confirmed cases in Knox County. That's up from 41, which was the number reported on Sunday. Tennessee Department of Health is going to report this afternoon at 3 o'clock. We'll get the new numbers then, but as of yesterday afternoon, 1,537 cases across the state. One news of note here this afternoon in Knox County is there's now one death connected to COVID-19 in Knox County, and because the HIPAA laws and the variety of other laws that are pertain here to the information being released. All we can be told by the Knox County Health Department is that someone in a high risk group. And again, one death, that's the first one connected to COVID-19. In Sevierville, for instance, they're shutting down all city parks, effective immediately because of the COVID-19 concerns. And a variety of police departments around the region now warning a lot of folks about scam callers. They're going to call up and say, in order to get your stimulus check from the government, you're going to need to give up some PayPal information, some banking information, possibly Social Security information to get your check. Government officials say that is not how they're doing this. They are not asking for essential information regarding your $1,200 stimulus check. That is a scam. It is not legitimate. So if you get a phone call saying, hey, in order to get that stimulus check, we got to get this information, to not give it out, it is absolutely not true.
All right. Thanks so much, Bob, for giving us that information. One thing, and I hear this criticism all the time, so I just want to ask you about it, is people are saying, well, the news is not reporting how many people are recovering from the coronavirus. I mean, it feels like it is just all the bad news about the people that are passing away. But Tennessee, as of right now, the death-related toll, in accordance to coronavirus, is well below the national numbers. Is that correct? And people need to also realize that just because there are positive cases doesn't mean that all of those people are dying.
Yeah, exactly. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that has been the trend the past couple of weeks, is that the Tennessee number of cases is below what we would see across the nation. I know as just a few days ago, the number of cases in Tennessee was, well, with the exception of a few states around us, was pretty much below the national norm. The higher states seem to be New York states, where they had close to 40,000 reports as at the end of last week. Florida, California, Washington State. In the southeast, however, including Tennessee and the surrounding states, the number of cases seem to be below the national average, it appears.
Bob Yarbrough is with us from our sister station, News Talk 98.7 WOKI. Are there questions that you've seen asked most often when it as it relates to the stimulus check, or any information that you think is important for people to know with that news coming out over the last few days and people still gathering details on it?
Well, absolutely. And I think the thing that officials want to get out right now is to try and stop this scam in its tracks there, that there's going to be a lot of information that's coming out in the next few days, and a lot of information that's already available for folks that you can find about the stimulus checks and all the small business loans and all the different things that are associated with that. Now, there's a lot of information, so giving it out on the radio is somewhat of a challenge, but we've got it at newstalk987.com. You can find a lot of the information there. And quite honestly, if you do a quick Google search, you'll find a variety of information as well. But I think the thing that they really want to make sure everyone's aware of today is they are not calling folks asking for personal information regarding PayPal or banking information, Social Security numbers, in order to get your check. So if you get those calls, understand that that is a scam. And if you give that information, you're really opening yourself up.
Bob, and I know I've been listening to what you guys have been doing over at News Talk and keeping people informed, and also, you know, keeping people upbeat and in trying to be a source of positivity. That's what Josh and I and everybody at the Sports Animal is trying to do. It really touched my heart on Friday when it was WBIR had the report about 9 suicides in Knox County in 48 hours. And that's well more people passing away because of suicide than of the coronavirus at this point. And is there just any information that you can give people who are really struggling with this quarantine right now, and you know, just how they can reach out if they need help?
Yeah, the positivity thing is something that Knox County Mayor Glenn Jacobs and the Health Department Director, Dr. Martha Buchanan, they are, and Knoxville Mayor India Kincannon as well, they're really pushing that to say, hey, we're going to get through this. We got to hunker down. It's going to take a little while longer. And you mentioned those 9 suicide cases. That was in the region. 8 of those were in Knox County. And to put that in perspective a little bit, and that's a 48-hour period, as you mentioned, Heather, but all of last year in Knox County, there were just over 80 suicides. So we're talking about 10% of last year's totals. in a 48-hour period. Now, I talked to the Knox County Mayor, Glenn Jacobs, earlier this morning. I said, do you have any new numbers regarding that? He had not collected new numbers. But again, he said, hey, please reach out to someone if you are having a tough time dealing with this. And I'll take it a step further than this as well. A lot of times, if you're having trouble, if you're in that dark place, it's almost impossible for you to reach out to someone. So if you think you know somebody, you've got a friend that might be suffering from depression or anything associated to this, you might want to reach out to them. They may not be capable of reaching out to you. But to give the National Suicide Prevention Hotline number, something I think we should do right now, as you mentioned, Heather, 1-800-273-TALK. That's 273-1-800-273-8255. But again, you may want to reach out to those that might be suffering from some type of depression. They may not be able to reach out to you.
They have you covered over at 98.7 WOKI. Newstalk987.com is the website as well. Ton of information there for you. Newstalk987.com. Bob, we appreciate the updates on a daily basis. Thanks so much. Anything else to add before we let you go?
No, we'll be back at 4:15, give or take a few minutes this afternoon with John and Jimmy. We'll have the latest there. And as long as I've got you here, Josh, I saw you in the grocery store, man. What was your final decision? You were staring intently at the jelly section, too. Were you looking at brands or were you looking at flavors or a combination there? What was that intense look all about?
Well, I was actually running through a combination of factors. It's very similar to a quarterback at the line of scrimmage who's trying to figure out, okay, I got to establish the Mike linebacker. Yeah. What kind of coverage are we looking at?
I got you.
There is essentially no difference in that and what I was doing in terms of trying to figure out, okay, where's the strawberry? I'm going to go reduce sugar and peanut. And the peanut butter combination as well, you're thinking combo routes. So I wanted a creamy natural, but where I was looking for that, it was out. So I went crunchy. You got to, you know, sometimes like Brady will throw the ball down in the dirt. Same situation here. So I just, you know, I bailed and took what I could get.
You were focused, man. I have never seen anybody that you saw what I did. I got in. I got my peanut butter. I got out.
Yeah, Bob, he's totally lying to you as well because he was really going for whatever he had a coupon for. That's what he was looking.
He was digitally downloading whatever coupon he needed at that point, yeah.
You remember the 98 finals, the Bulls and the Jazz, game 6, Jordan steals the ball from Malone, and he takes the ball up, takes his time before that final jump shot, the focus.
Right.
Pretty much that situation.
So it's the same thing. I got your jelly selection the same as a Michael Jordan shot. I got you. Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, man, I guess you could nitpick and find differences, but that's what we do nowadays.
Dude, I salute and admire the intensity that you were going at that jelly section with. That was nice.
It's all about preparation and forward thinking, and that was my goal there. I hope you got out of there okay, Bob. Thanks again for stopping by, and we'll check in again with you a little bit later. Bob Yarbrough, our friend from Newstalk 98.7 WOKI. You always got to keep looking ahead, though, Heather. That's the real key.
Yeah, and I'm just glad that you were doing your due diligence because you never know what's going to come up. You might need that jelly. I mean, that jelly might become an integral part of your diet in the next couple of weeks. And so I just hope that you made the right choice.
Number one jelly flavor is, what would you say?
Strawberry, hands down.
Yeah. It's a runaway. We'll come back 656-9900 for you to join us in another 90 minutes of sports, 180 to go. We'll catch you up on what's been going on today in the sports world here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. Thank you for being with us this Monday afternoon. We enter the second half of Sports 180 with Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward. Sam Foreman producing for us this afternoon on Sports 180, as he will for Sports Talk later today as well. And there is news to report with Tennessee's football program, Heather, as just a few minutes ago, Jalen Wright, a 2021 running back prospect out of the state of North Carolina, announced his commitment to Tennessee. He is a speedster. He is a track champ, and he can move, and at the running back position, I think that's pretty important. So Jalen Wright, announcing his commitment to the University of Tennessee just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, I like how Jesse Simonton broke it down. He said, one of the fastest players in the country. And Jalen Wright says that I picked the Vols because I just knew. I knew I wanted to be a part of that. So I think that's really cool. 2021 to look forward to. So in this time of just uncertainty and frustration, at least a little positive recruiting news for Tennessee fans to get you through the day.
Yeah, so Jalen Wright, as Jesse noted, he ran a 6.29 in the 55 meters dash. So, yeah, he can move very quickly. So a running back added to Tennessee's 2021 class with that announcement just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, so good news for Tennessee on that front. And that's something that, you know, we have talked about, not necessarily from a speed perspective, but just playmaking. You know, Tennessee at some point in time has got to have some more playmakers. And the coaches know that. I think when you look back on it and when we look, say we get 5 years down the road and we look back on how Jeremy Pruitt was building an SEC title contender, and that's the conversation that we're having. Well, they did their first two priorities, which are not the sexiest priorities, but are the most necessary. That was building the lines of scrimmage. You can check both of those boxes. You have seen the dedication to upgrading the defensive and offensive line from Jeremy Pruitt over his first couple of recruiting classes, even including grad transfer Cade Mays. So you check those boxes, and then you need some guys that are going to be guys that can break open a game, guys that can really change momentum in a positive way, whether it's playing on special teams, whether it's playing coming out of the backfield, if you're in the slot, whatever the case may be. So I think you're now seeing Jeremy Pruitt and his staff really just swinging for the fences for guys that have the potential to be those players that can completely change a game when the ball gets in their hands.
Yeah, and we'll see. I'll actually be curious how rankings are affected by all that's going on, because I'm guessing you're not going to have as much in-person action to see to great players on. Right now, Jalen Wright is not very highly rated in the 2021 class. The 247 sports ranking has him as the 88th ranked running back in the country, 58th ranked player in the state of North Carolina. Rivals does not have a ranking, as I can tell right now, on him, and so he is not ranked in the composite either. But Jalen Wright, a running back listed 5'11", about 185 pounds, from Durham, North Carolina, announcing his commitment to Tennessee.
Do you think Jeremy Pruitt has enough equity built up with his first two recruiting classes to show to get people to trust who he's bringing in, trust who he's getting commitments from at this point? Because I think with the high hit rate of last year's class and how incredible it seemed like that hit rate was, and the different areas of focus that he has paid the most attention to, I think he's really built up a nice little stockpile of belief from the fans. So where, yeah, you might be getting the 88th player, but he's like, no, trust me. Trust me on this one. This could be sort of like a Rick Barnes going out and getting a three-star Grant Williams, you know, seeing the potential and seeing the intangibles that a player has right now and how they're going to translate in your program. Do you think he's there yet?
No, I do not. That's not to knock any of the individual players, but like if you bring up the 2019 class, so that was the freshman class this past year, who among the guys that made immediate impacts were not highly ranked? That you came out of the year saying, man, really like what I saw from him.
Yeah, that is really, that's a good point, because, I mean, Henry Toutoua, that was still a surprise, you know, get that they were able to land him. And that's because, I mean, he's looking at Alabama and some other just insane places. So I think you bring up a really good point there, where not many off-the-radar guys have had the ability or had the impact yet that those highly ranked guys. I think that's a good point.
Yeah, so, and again, I don't mean that to knock Jalen Wright or anybody else, including members of the 2019 class, because they've only been on campus 1 year. Judging the class would be ridiculous at this point because they haven't had nearly enough time. I don't think it's a coincidence that the guys that made the biggest impact were players that were more highly rated, because athletically they were probably more advanced, like To'o To'o. Wanya Morris was highly ranked. Eric Gray, with the at least the ability that he showed in the plays that he made late in the season, was a highly ranked player. Jalen McCullough, same deal. So, you know, I think the closest in that conversation would actually be a JUCO transfer in Darrell Middleton, who really made a nice impact. He was not as highly ranked, I don't believe. Athletically, I think he fits the part, but he was a JUCO prospect, so a little bit different there. I would just say that Tennessee will need more Henry To'o To'o-like players.
Yeah, that's hard to say.
Ranked players, if you want to just have it that, if you want to have that kind of conversation, yeah, that is really difficult to say. But Henry To'o To'o-like players, Kovaris Crouch, Eric Gray-level players to win at the highest level in the SEC.
Yeah, and
especially along the lines of scrimmage. And Chris Lowe in the first hour did point out improving there is maybe the most impressive thing, and that I would agree with for sure.
Yeah, because when you look at the starting five that Tennessee was working with when Jeremy Pruitt hit the ground running at the University of Tennessee, and you compare, just compare sizes, just compare recruiting rankings from that first year to the starting five that we think he's going to have whenever they kick off the 2020 season, it's definitely an upgrade at this point on the offensive line. He's definitely he knew that that was a big time priority, and the only way this team was going to get better was if the offensive line got better. And so that's why you've seen those guys really go out and hit the recruiting trail hard. But yeah, you're right. You know, the more I look at it and pull up those 2019 rankings, all the guys that we knew their names right off the bat, those were the biggest power players, you could say, and they were the highest ranked. So that is definitely a good point. I wonder if this guy that they just signed, or not signed, but that they just got a commitment from, if he continues to showcase his speed in whatever capacity whenever camps open back up, and maybe even his football season this coming season, if you will see him climb at all. Because there's one thing that you can try and coach and get better at, but speed is a hard thing to learn, and it looks like he checks that box.
Yeah, I would think that he would. I mean, he's not ranked by Rivals right now, so I would imagine that he moves up in the rankings, whether we're talking about the different sites or the composite. But I also do wonder, I'm just wondering out loud, what are camps going to happen? I mean, I don't know. I mean, the Pac-12 today announced that they are suspending all team activity through May. So, you know, activities that are going to take place around that time in June, that's all up in the air right now. Not that rankings mean everything, but it can't affect offers. I mean, schools try to get kids on campus and work out, and you can earn offers that way. So the recruiting world will be affected by however this plays out over the next few months as well. And the most highly rated guys, they've got the offers, and the coaches know what they're looking for. But there are a lot more prospects than just the very high-level players that probably get talked about the most. Speaking of some updates there, mentioned that timeline on the Pac-12 decision. They're suspending all activities through May 31st, and they have the two-hour window that's now allowed for the virtual meetings and chalk talk, as the SEC had that over the weekend as well. So trying to catch up on what they can do. That's not everything, but while players and coaches are separated right now, they are trying to improve the level of communication because of just what they're facing and the challenges that they're dealing with. And some players will have an easier time doing that than others as well, but that's at least having that available, I do think, is important.
Oh, yeah.
For the SEC and for all the other conferences as well.
And I really feel like the NCAA, the conferences, I know we're waiting to figure out how the NCAA vote is going to go, as that's taking place at some point today. But I really do feel like if you're grading about adapting on the fly and being very pro student athlete, I feel like all the conferences and the NCAA are really doing a great job when it comes to, okay, let's make this exception for this year. Okay, let's have some virtual classes that you guys can set up and that you guys can do. So kind of, because that's where everybody is. I mean, everybody's trying to conduct business right now as normally, and I use giant finger quotations for that, as normally as possible. And some businesses are just really knocking it out of the park. And so I do feel like they are addressing some really big issues right now, and they are making some really good exceptions when it comes to just trying to help the student athletes out.
I do think the conferences, the schools themselves, with the administrators, athletic directors, coaches, I think they're trying to do what they can to help the athletes, because you're right. Nothing about this is normal. Normalizing it as best they can is really important. We'll come back here on Sports 180 with Heather Harrington. I'm Josh Ward. Coming up next, you would probably think, man, the Bucks really had to swing for the fences to land Tom Brady. Did he recruit the Bucks a little bit? That coming up next, as you'll hear from the Buccaneers GM. You'll also hear from E.J. Anasicki's head coach at Sacred Heart in about 45 minutes right here on Sports 180. As we're with you until 3 on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Name a more iconic duo than the Budweiser Studios and Cumulus Broadcasting.
It's all right.
I'll wait. This is Sports Radio WNML.
Back for the final segment of hour number 2 of Sports 180. We are with you until 3 o'clock, and as I have mentioned before, we'll still hear from Anthony Latina, the Sacred Heart head coach, who has coached E.J. Anasicki, and I think you'll appreciate what he has to say about the forward who has announced that he is transferring to Tennessee as a grad transfer. So that's coming up next hour. We've spent a fair amount of time, would you say, Heather, over the last couple of weeks talking about one Tom Brady, the former New England Patriot quarterback who is now a member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate label, considering that we had a rejoin created for him, a special feature as we were doing Tom Brady Watch. And he honestly, I mean, God bless him, he got us through the first week of the coronavirus, just kind of business as usual. So if you're not a TB12 fan down in Tampa, hey, that was the one thing keeping us going for like a solid week. So I love it.
Sports talk radio across the country adopted some kind of TB12 method to fill some of the programming hours. So I think you're used to at least the news of it by now. But how about how it played out? That was a question to Jason Light, the GM of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, earlier today when he was on Get Up on ESPN, and he kind of walked through those days, the planning for free agency, and then that Monday through Wednesday or Thursday when Tom Brady ended up becoming a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, how it kind of went according to the Bucs GM.
We spent a lot of time this offseason, as soon as the season ended, meeting, evaluating every quarterback, every player, like we always do, but especially quarterbacks that we thought, you know, that could be potential UFAs. Coaches, my scouts, did an in-depth, very detailed work on all of them and planning on all of them, which one of them could potentially help us and upgrade us at the position. And Bruce made it clear in some interviews that Tom Brady was one, and we did not leave Jameis Winston out of the plan. As soon as Wednesday rolled around and we were able to talk to Tom Brady, we had a great conversation, Bruce and I. We talked to him for over an hour and a half, and he made it clear in the conversation that he was very, very interested. It was almost like a recruitment on his part, telling us why it would make sense for him to come to Tampa Bay. And the following day, we signed him, but it was at that phone call that we realized that we felt like, we had him.
And, of course, the Bucs got him, but kind of interesting there that maybe Tom Brady was selling himself a little bit. I don't know that we're ever going to know exactly what the market was for Tom, and part of that is because you kind of play the game like the head coaching circuit in college football. You know how a school only offers one coach, they never offer more than one coach because are things really official? So, like the Raiders, was it the Raiders showed interest, but Brady didn't have as much interest, so the Raiders never made an official offer. The Chargers, maybe a similar situation. I think the Chargers really wanted him, and it didn't work out. What about the Titans? I don't know that we're ever going to know exactly what the plan was on each side. There might have been some leverage from both sides, but it does sound like from a football standpoint, Tom has looked at the Buccaneers and said, I know the culture needs to improve, but I'm going to bet on that guy, Jason Light, who he knows from the Patriot days, Bruce Arians, who's respected as a coach, and the personnel that they can figure it out and get it right. And that's why he ended up at a place where 2 months ago, if you said he's going to end up being with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, most people would have laughed off the idea.
Yeah, and I think you bring up the perfect analogy and the perfect comparison for this situation, because we're never going to know. We're never going to know how many teams, like you said, really wanted Tom Brady and how many of those he would have even considered going to. And the idea of college football coaches you know, being somebody's first choice when really it was about the seventh or eighth phone call they made. That's what Bill O'Reilly likes to call the spin zone. So you're never going to totally know what happens in the spin zone because it's all about PR and kind of saving face. But I do think that that was a great analogy you just laid out for people. And hey, the bottom line is, I think Tampa Bay got a really good quarterback. The expiration date is short. It's kind of like getting meat on sale. You're like, or like really fancy cheese for half price, and you're like, oh, I can eat that in the next 2 days. Of course, I'm gonna get that because it's half price. Now Tom Brady wasn't half price, but you still got a really good value for yeah. the next couple of years for the Tampa Bay Bucks. So I think it's a win-win for both the team and Tom.
Yeah, I think it probably is as well. I'm gonna be super depressing here in the question, but Aww. Just hear me out. Are Boston fans, is like 5% of them, maybe 0.5% of them, hoping, wait a minute, you know, if we didn't get sports this year, that wouldn't be the worst. That means you don't see Mookie Betts play for the Dodgers, and you could avoid seeing Tom Brady in a Buccaneers uniform. Is there something in the Boston sports fan maybe thinking that, or absolutely not?
Because of the serious nature of what's, like, the reason why we wouldn't have football, I would say it would only take the most calloused, stone-cold Boston heart. Those guys do exist. They might be on the radio right now. But
yeah, remember, I'm bringing up Boston sports fans here.
Yeah, so they definitely could be out there like, eh, it wouldn't be the worst year in sports to lose, but I still... Football is going to do everything they can. I mean, they will yeah. tweak their schedule. They will do everything they can to play this football season. I'm not saying they're going to play it during the parameters or the normal times that they would have, but they will fight and claw and kick everybody else to get them out of the way so that they can have their TV time.
Yeah, part of the conversation that you can find out there is the idea of moving the football season up, or the football season back, or having a shortened season, just figuring out some way to have football, maybe find some random mass of land somewhere on Earth and just ship all the players there. I saw Mike Florio. I mean, that's when you know that some people are starting to break mentally.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know what? Why don't you just put them all in a bubble and send them out to who knows where and let them play football there? And I guess we'll get some cameras and upload the video. I don't know.
Yeah. Hey, there's been some kooky ideas that have been thrown out, but the bottom line is they're going to do everything possible to continue the world's number one game when it comes to or America's number one game when it comes to it. I'm sure soccer leagues are also very much paying attention to when the nearest possible time they could get back out on the soccer field and play. I mean, this is just people need it. Like, the craziest thing is, whenever there's something depressing usually going on in life, you kind of turn to sports to zone out and just have some fun and relax with your team. And it's like, bam, bam, you've got a crazy situation going on and you don't even have sports as an outlet. So that's why you're starting to see people sort of lose their minds. Also, did you see the tweet Saturday Down South sent out over the weekend about moving? They said everybody collectively, the thought of moving the football season up to where you're playing in just the brutal heat of summer and some of the ramifications that come along with sweating. It was really funny. You've got to go back and look at that tweet. It was great.
Yeah, well, I didn't see it, but I mean, when I saw the idea of, okay, we're going to move it up and play in July, I mean, the immediate questions I have is, okay, well, when are you going to actually start preparing for this?
Yeah.
Because the idea of just showing up and playing in July, you want to start risking health. That's how you do it. To have guys go out when they're probably not in shape to play at the highest of levels in the middle of the summer Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good idea either. So, I mean, everybody's at least trying to come up with something or thinking of ideas. I get that. But the idea to me that doesn't make a whole lot of sense is especially at the, I mean, any level, I guess, but to show up and you're just going to start playing a season in July,
you
have to have time to build up. You know, so with the NBA, I don't know what their plan would be if they do return to action. Like, just showing up and playing in the playoffs when teams have been off for a few months, that's a risky move, too. So there is no obvious answer, though, so I want to recognize and point that out. Again, people are trying to come up with ideas, and that I appreciate, at least. But showing up and starting a season in July, they better get back to activity well before that. And the Pac-12, they're not even considering the idea of returning to action until June.
Yeah, so the biggest thing is I think it would happen, obviously, later if everything is going to be held somewhat intact. You're just going to see the start dates pushed back. So do you start football in October after a six-week acclimation period that starts maybe in August? I think that could definitely be something that's realistic, but there's still a lot of doubts out there. And when you're dealing with something, and we always bring this up, we're dealing with such an unknown factor here with the COVID-19, the actual virus. You know, it could taper off a little bit. It could flare back up. And so everything then would have to get shut back down again and figure it out from there. So very fluid, but I would not ever bet on sooner. I would definitely bet on things happening at a later adjusted timeline.
All right, hopefully we've cheered you up here in the last 5 minutes. We'll come back for the final hour of Sports 180, how Tennessee football has improved over the last year or two. That to begin the final hour of Sports 180 right here on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.